This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 7. This is Herding Code. We have our official name and we're glad you found us. This week we're going to be talking about Microsoft technology stack and whether or not it's a good fit for startups. So this is John Galloway and we've got K. Scott Allen, Scott Coon, aka Lazy Coder, and we've got Kevin Dente. So I think the first question that kind of makes sense to frame this is, who here has worked at a startup?
I have.
I have.
I've worked at 4.
Now, K. Scott, you actually, I remember you had a funny blog post about something being confiscated or showing up to work, and there were...
I've worked at 4 startups, 3 of which are now defunct. Some of them went out of business in the usual, you know, flame out, run out of money kind of sense. And there was also one where the FBI showed up one day, which was very exciting.
Those are the best kinds.
When I'm sitting at my desk and someone yells into my office and I'm thinking it's the FedEx guy who's lost again, and I want to turn around and give him a piece of my mind, but then I realize that the person standing in my office has a gun and is dressed just like the people I see on Cops when they're doing one of those undercover narcotics busts.
And you heard, you heard the Bad Boys, Bad Boys theme song going? Yeah, we had, I haven't worked at an internet startup. I've done consulting for some internet startups. And I remember one, we had a team that just worked like crazy, you know, crazy hours to get things done for a product release. And then we realized, like, very soon after that they never intended to actually use it. And that it was for homestore.com. And they really just kind of bought it for some kind of marketing thing or whatever. And then, pretty soon after that, there was some kind of stock fraud thing, and they went away, mostly went away. So fun times. Well, so one of the things that comes up when you talk about, you know, whether or not Microsoft works for as a technology stack is, you know, to frame the question, do startups use Microsoft technologies? I mean, a few do. Does anyone think of any offhand? It's hard.
I can has cheeseburger.com.
Okay.
Here in Seattle, Jot, J-O-T-T, uses the .NET stack. Gosh, who else? Page Flakes, are they still around?
I think so.
They were famous because I think they were even featured on ASP.NET.
Right. So, I guess what we're talking about, I mean, obviously in the desktop software, there's plenty that use Microsoft technologies so that they can install on that. But in the non, you know, in the web world, it's quite rare or more rare. So, you know, asking around about that, one thing that people brought up as an impediment is the licensing cost, especially when you're talking about databases. Like SQL Server costs a lot, whereas MySQL, you can just, you know, roll it out on a box. What do you guys think about that?
At codebetter.com, Carl Seguin, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Had an interesting post about scaling up databases on the cheap, and he was essentially putting forth the idea that sharding your database is a cheap way to achieve scalability. And he had kind of asked the question, how, you know, why is it so much more prevalent in the MySQL community than it is in the MSSQL community? And I think that's primarily due to cost and general confusion about the licensing around a lot of Microsoft products. So I know they did some work on the licensing for SQL 2005 to make it a little bit more clear, but before that, you never knew if you needed CALS for every user that was going to be hitting the database, or if you just needed one you know, license for the server? Or how, I mean, I've tried purchasing some of that stuff or helping purchase, you know, to decide what our needs are, and just trying to figure out what we actually need to buy is, you know, it's like navigating. What was the name of that maze that that the Minotaur used to stay in? In the Greek mythology. We'll have to look that up. but it's very cost prohibitive for a startup. Most of the startups that I've worked at, I've only worked at two really, and both of them were started by people who were Microsoft certified trainers, and they were starting it up with the goal of becoming like a partner, a gold partner, or anything like that. So they were already committed to the Microsoft stack, which in some cases I don't think is a good thing to do, to pick your technology before you have a plan.
I think one thing database wise especially is that let's just throw out a number, 15,000 for a SQL Server license, and I don't know if I'm way off there. But let's say that's the cost versus, you know, say in a year of development for startup, you know, how much you're going to spend on actually developing. And you know, I've worked at places where they did use MySQL and they're like tech brainiac left, and the next day they had some kind of weird key corruption thing, and it's probably better by now, but MySQL didn't automatically detect corrupted keys, and their whole CMS was down, and they'd reuse the same CMS for all their clients. And so basically all their clients were down, you know. And so I'm trying to think, you know, cost-wise, it's pretty quick if you've got a database that is easier to manage. I could see that over time that's where your trade-off would be.
Well, if that was the case, if it was a matter of choosing a better technology over a poor technology, why wouldn't Oracle get more play?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a scale, right? I mean, I don't know exactly how much Oracle costs, but and then also, you know, you end up with the Oracle, the administration costs have traditionally been really high. You know what I mean? Once you get it installed, you're paying a lot of money for somebody who can know what the heck to do with it. Whereas, you know, at least the elevator speech is, you know, you can get one guy to manage several databases and it all kind of works. Kevin, you got something to say?
Yeah, I just want to say I agree with John's point that if, especially if you're talking about a reasonably funded startup, that the software costs for something like SQL Server and a Windows Server relatively modest compared to what you're going to be investing, you know, in development time. So if that saves you effort and time, then I think that'll pay back pretty quickly. Now, if you're like the, you know, bootstrap startup with two guys, you know, working nights in their loft in San Francisco, then even that might be a little too much to take on. But one thing that I think is kind of interesting is, you know, Microsoft has some of these great programs for ISVs. Like they have this Empower program, which basically gives you all the MSDN software for $375 a year, which is like an incredible deal. But from my reading of the program, it really only targets the ISV who's shipping packaged, you know, rich client Windows software. And there's no discussion of whether you can use that program, you know, in a web startup. And so I think, you know, either offering that kind of program or at least making it clear that is valid for web startups would go a long way toward alleviating some of the cost concerns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what we're talking about some there is that I think that we make some bad, or people in general make bad calculations in saying, you know, being penny wise, pound foolish on saving, you know, maybe a few thousand dollars on a server here or there. But, you know, I mean, your costs overall and in the bigger scale are going to usually be quite a bit more than that. So then it comes down to whatever your development shop's going to be better on. I read an interesting post this past week, and his name is Simone Chiaretta, I think. I'm going to say it wrong. Simone Chiaretta, I think, is his name. And he said that he's a developer on Subtext, and he had said that he kind of classified where people's roots were. And, you know, it was kind of a gross generalization, but he was saying, you know, a lot of the time, like, people that end up in the PHP stack started out in the design or the HTML side. And so, like, coming in as an HTML first and adding code makes more sense, whereas people traditionally that end up in the ASP.NET, you know, the Microsoft world, have started more from the client desktop area, you know, and then the Java community usually has started from the server side and worked their way over. So, I mean, and of course that's a gross generalization, but I have seen, you know, I've worked with plenty of great, you know, developers in different areas, and it's just, you kind of like, you grow up in a technology stack and one just really makes sense to you. What do you guys think on that? Okay, Kevin.
Well, I mean, for me, one of the key factors for this kind of decision is what are you going to be most productive in? And so if you know the .NET stack and that's going to help you get your site up and running the quickest, then, you know, that, I think that's a great way to go. I think it's dumb to pick, you know, for most people, the problem is not, is one stack better or the other? It's just getting the damn thing written. And if you're going to get it written in .NET faster than you would in Rails, then I think that's what you should do.
Okay, Scott, what do you want to talk about?
A couple of startups that I worked with years ago, a lot of the original technology choices were decided by what the people who were funding this were comfortable with. So in one case, we went in a Microsoft direction. We were using Visual Studio. But in another case, one of the founding members used to run an ISP for years, and he was very familiar with all the Unix shells and Unix development environments. So we were working with Linux and MySQL and tools like that. I was writing Python code for a while. It was a lot of fun. But what I've been seeing recently is a lot of people will pick, will mix and match. So you'll find the shops that use Visual Studio, they'll use SQL Server, they'll be hosting things on Windows. But some of the other tools, you'll find some subversions very popular for source control. You'll find all sorts of open source and free tools that are used for the bug tracking and project management. So it can be a mix.
Yeah, I think that is kind of interesting where you get the different kind of, like, you've got the Microsoft-only shops, you know, which tend to be like, back in the day, they were using SourceSafe because that's how you did source control, you know. And then you've got the anything but Microsoft or the, you know, the LAMP shops. And then I think it is interesting to see the kind of pragmatic, you know, use whatever is kind of makes the most sense at the time. You know, and throw in a little bit of this and subversion here and move on to the next thing, you know, when it makes sense. So. Yeah, so I mean, tooling is an issue. You know, if we talk about Visual Studio, I guess you have the trade-off. You know, you can work with the Express versions, and you can get so far with them. But if you're going to start scaling up, you're going to need more at that time. Any thoughts on that?
Well, not necessarily on that, but going back to K. Scott's point where you kind of see this mixing and matching. So a lot of times what you'll also see is, aside from the mixing and matching, but you'll see different parts, like internal tools will be written using one technology and the external kind of product may be written using another. Like one shop I worked at, we, you know, primarily did made solutions using Java and Oracle, but all of our internal tools, the timesheet app, the budgeting, project management kind of stuff was all written using the Microsoft stack. And another kind of question that I'd like to throw out there is, are there reasons for a startup to use a non-Microsoft development tool other than cost? I mean, we've kind of focused on cost, but there's also some cases like the example of using Visual Studio combined with Subversion, where ease of use comes into play. So I've kind of had the opportunity to work with Team Foundation Server here recently, and I found it extremely lacking compared to open source tools like Subversion.
Yeah, it's been interesting because I've talked to people that are very, I've talked to Steve Andrews and Jeff Hatwood and a few other people that really get Team System, and they'll say that a lot of what's good about Team System is not just the source control, it's that it integrates with so many other things. But I agree, coming from the point of view of having worked with Subversion for a few years and taken some time to learn it, that it's so kind of effortless, and it really just gets out of my way, and just make sure that I don't lose source code, and that's about it.
I don't know that I've seen any real strengths for TFS compared to Subversion with some sort of external bug tracking work item tool
like Track
that integrates like Track, or we used Bugzilla that integrated with Perforce. So as we checked in codes, we could file the check-ins against bugs. And, so mark the bug as resolved, needs testing, or whatever, as we did that. That may be possible with TFS, but I haven't seen that kind of integration. I know you can check off work items and things, but I haven't seen that really used well a lot of the places.
Yeah. One thing that I think might happen here is that you get a small, say for instance, herding code. We're all probably most comfortable with .NET and SQL Server and all that. But our website is hosted on, on a LAMP stack, and it's mostly because Site5 is incredibly cheap. I think we're paying $5 a month for unlimited bandwidth, unlimited hosting, storage, and it's got Fantastico, so I can install WordPress. And the other day I was like, "Hey, I'll install a wiki," and it two clicks, and I've got a wiki installed. And so, I think you get something where, because let's say Herding Code grows over time to become, a mega company. Well, I think in our case, we'd probably switch over at some point, but I think a lot of companies might just continue to grow where they're at. And so it's easy, say you've got the two guys in a garage kind of thing, and then, as you grow, you continue to, to just build up. And so maybe it's the just cheapness of hosting on Linux that gets people started, and then they grow. Kevin?
Yeah, and I think that segues into what Microsoft really targets in their tools. TFS being a prime example of Microsoft is targeting the enterprise. Their tools are targeting the medium to large space. And, setting up a TFS server for a two-person startup would be kind of insane. And I think, TFS is only one example. I think a lot of their development tools, fall into that same bucket. And so they're just not targeting that space as well as I think that they could if they want to, you know, capture some mind share in the internet community.
So could it be more that Microsoft is making tools that are targeted not necessarily just towards enterprise, but towards really complicated problems that require more complicated solutions, and most startups are looking to do the simplest thing possible that works when they're starting up. And, you know, like, this goes back to lots of discussions we have about particular patterns or technologies. You know, you only need to use dependency injection when it makes sense for the project. You only need to use an object relational mapper, you know, when it makes sense. You wouldn't want to use a graphical tool, as Kay Scott will tell you, to manage hundreds or thousands of entities in an ERD, necessarily a database. So maybe the idea that people are picking open source or free solutions like the LAMP stack over Microsoft is more related towards those tools being a little bit simpler and more approachable in some cases. Because most people can look at the drag and drop demos that they do for new releases of Visual Studio or the language, and you know, if the dev has any kind of experience at all, more than like, you know, 2 months, they're going to look at those drag and drop demos and go, yeah, but that won't work for us because as soon as we do that, we've lost control of the code. We need to go in there and modify stuff anyway, so we might as well do it from scratch, yada, yada. And so they're not as afraid to get in and, you know, if they're going to be writing lots of alligator tags or, you know, handwriting lots of HTML and code behind code, why not use PHP or Rails in, you know, versus ASP.NET, because it seems simpler. And that's certainly the way that Rails was first marketed. You know, as a much, you know, their first screencast wasn't about MVC necessarily. It was the 10-minute blog demo. So maybe that's kind of what the startups are looking for, something that seems simpler or something that appears to be more simple than, you know, team, foundation, server, enterprise, biz talk, whatever the latest thing is.
It's interesting because in a lot of ways I see the enterprise as being, for the most part, simpler than the internet startup in a lot of ways. I mean, a lot of what the applications that people are putting up in an enterprise are rinky-dink little, you know, formerly written in VB6, you know, internal applications that are probably not nearly as, you know, designed to be scalable or as robust or as rich a user experience as what an internet startup would be looking for. So in some ways I see the flip side of that, although, yeah, certainly once you get BizDoc and all that crap into the equation, then complexity kind of goes through the roof.
I think too, you know, we were talking about the source of like developers, and I think one thing is that, you know, I don't know how many schools are teaching Microsoft technologies, but I don't think it's that many of them. And I think that, you know, that say you want as a startup, you're going to be running on low cost, you know, you've got your pyramid of your Uber developers, and then you need a lot of just code monkeys. And I think it's probably just a lot easier to find, you know, more, I think that it's more prevalent to find PHP developers. Does that ring true with you guys? That's been kind of my experience.
Cheap labor. So this kind of comes up in all the TCO talks between Linux and Windows. People say that, you know, Linux is free only if your time is worthless. So the idea being that, you know, you still have to pay someone to maintain these servers, and a lot of times Linux administrators maybe cost more than Windows administrators. And you could look at that from the standpoint of you pay what, you know, you get what you pay for.
Well, there's one thing. So if you're outsourcing, is there, you know, say companies that will outsource to India or whatever, do you know if there's any effect, whether using the Microsoft stack or the non-Microsoft stack? In my experience, it wasn't at all hard to find people in the Philippines or in India who were very competent .NET developers, .NET and especially SQL developers. I don't know if you guys have seen that. Now, I haven't worked with offshore developers in other, you know, in the non-Microsoft world. But I was actually, I worked on a project where we worked with some developers in the Philippines doing reporting services. And we set things up, and they we set up the data in the day, and they made the reports at night, and it was like clockwork. It really worked well. So very high skill level.
Well, do we want to talk about the sort of the tools themselves, the framework, the?
Sure. So yeah, the you know, we're talking about some different things. One is the development tools. And, you know, in the Microsoft world, you've got Visual Studio, and very neatly, you know, you say new website or new Ajax website or whatever, and you've got your ASP.NET and your syntax highlighting. So what's your experience in a Rails project?
So there's not a lot of options, or there didn't used to be a lot of options when it came to IDEs and Rails. You know, you had IRB, which is their interactive Ruby shell that you could break into and debug using. And other than that, it was a text editor. Most people either used Emacs, Vim, or TextMate. In fact, the developer of TextMate should be paying 37 Signals royalties on every sale of TextMate licenses, I think. Now, when it comes to the Java stack, you know, you've got Eclipse, and Eclipse is a very, very interesting development platform, extensible through the plugins, much more easily, it would seem, than Visual Studio. I know that there are PHP development plugins for Eclipse. There's at least two different Rails ones. Let's see, what else was there for PHP? There was a Zend IDE, I believe, put out by the Zend Corporation. The owners of, are they the owners or are they the developers of the PHP language, or some iteration of the PHP language, I think. Might want to research that before I put that out. Let's see. Recently, Sun has announced, or not announced, they shipped, by God, Ruby and Rails support in their NetBeans product. That's free. What else do we have? Can anyone think of any other tools that are even remotely comparable to Visual Studio? There aren't really. Although it's interesting that on the Mac platform, the install DVD ships with Xcode and Interface Builder and all of the documentation, which is also updated, you know, online as they ship new versions of the documentation. So developers that want to start developing things for the OS X platform, their startup cost is the cost of a Mac, you know, a MacBook or a Mac Pro.
You know, that's something that, I mean, you really point out something that's, it's part of a bigger picture, but I've always been frustrated that Visual Studio Express didn't ship with Windows. And I mean, I know there's arguments against, you know, it's a larger surface area for, I don't know, something or more to support or whatever. But I really do think, as you're talking about growing the platform, I mean, I learned to program on an Apple II, and a lot of the reason was because the Apple II had BASIC running at the command line, right? And when you install when you install .NET, I mean, you get the CSC or VBC compilers, and you can, you know, but I think that you'd get more developers starting from scratch if you had, you know, if it was part of the Windows install.
Yeah, I'd agree. One of the ways that I ramped up and kind of kept my programming interest through college when I wasn't necessarily going, you know, taking any CS classes was by getting a student discount on things like VB5 and Visual J++. I remember buying a not-for-resale copy of Visual J++ when I worked at a computer store for, you know, $10 or $20 or whatever it was through the vendor. And that's one thing that I've always kind of poked Microsoft as if they've heard it or felt my tiny little pokings on my blog.
They're smarting right now. It keeps them awake at night.
I'm
like,
sure.
No!
That they don't ship, you know, a version of Visual Studio, even just a trial version, you know, 90, 180-day trial version on the install DVD.
Totally agree. Well, in unfortunate news, it looks like we've lost K. Scott Allen, which is always sad. Let's go ahead and open up the phone lines.
Hello?
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Booyah.
Do you remember what the seventh song we played was?
I believe that was Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin.
I'm sorry, that's not correct. But remember to call back. Remember to call back, and you could win a 1-care license.
So. For coming in last, for not answering the question correctly, you get 2 1-care licenses.
So one other interesting effect I was thinking about, you know, is that we've been talking about the startups that start with open source. One thing that I've seen, though, there have been a few companies that have started with open source and have moved to Microsoft. And you know, one example of that is MySpace. I mean, you know, is kind of the poster child, but they've moved from Cold Fusion over to well, and that's not really open source, but they moved from Cold Fusion over to the Microsoft. The ASP.NET, and then
well, that's kind of like, you know, stopping hitting yourself in the balls and starting to hit yourself in the eye.
Yes. Well, and then, you know, another thing I was looking at was like, say, Phalanger, which is a it runs PHP in the ASP.NET platform, and supposedly a lot faster because it's compiled as opposed to interpreted. So. You know, I mean, that is an interesting possibility for a company that once, you know, they start open source, keep their costs nothing, and then as they get big, then they you know, get a, they, you know, have some revenue and they move over to you know, a few servers. You know, another thing that's kind of funny is that server licensing really is not that huge of an expense when you're talking about a larger company. So, I mean, if you're talking...
Yeah, because they just pirate the licenses anyway.
Well, like, okay, if you've got, like, a huge server farm model like Google or
okay, we have to leave Google out of any startup talk. Google's problems are not our problems.
Right, but I'm talking about... Okay, so, like, Google or Second Life or companies like that that are... Their architecture is based on thousands of servers. So in that case, you'd really have some trouble running that effectively in Microsoft platform. But if you've got 5 servers, then, you know, it's not really a huge expense.
I've been in a couple weird scenarios with startups where once you've achieved some level of success and then you have outside people looking at you, angel investors and venture capitalists and people that want to put money into the company, and they'll often have this phase called the technical due diligence, or they'll do due diligence for the financials and everything too, but I've been in two scenarios where we'll come in and say, we'd like to give you some money, but here's a couple problems. One is that we don't like this piece of middleware that you're working with. So in one case, it was the database. We were told that we had to move to something that was available and mature, like DB2 or Oracle. In another case, we were told back in the .com heyday that we had to have some sort of transaction server, some sort of transaction monitor in place. So sometimes technology choices are a really weird thing. There's a lot of business decisions and all sorts of backroom deals that happen. I've also sat in a room where Oracle salespeople have come in and given a pitch, and IBM people have come in and given a pitch and basically want to give away database licenses so that to the startup, so that hopefully one day you'll be successful and they can charge you a lot more money.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true, and I think that, you know, one kind of strange justification that I've heard is people will not want to run on Microsoft because they won't want that dependence on one company or something, or they'll want to have some kind of for business reasons, they'll want to say, well, we don't want to be depending on that relationship with this company, and that always strikes me as a little bit strange. It's kind of like saying, well, we don't really want electricity, or we don't want phone service because we don't want to have some reliance on, you know, Ma Bell or AT&T.
You know, maybe we should find out what technology Skype is built on, because this is an amazing piece of technology. The fact that I'm running on a 4-year-old Apple laptop. Hey, Scott is called in on his cell phone, and you two are in Southern California on Windows PCs, and it's all working as well as it is.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a lesson to be learned there for startups, that it's not necessarily about the you know, my T-Mobile cell phone doesn't get this kind of reception in my house.
Yeah, that's true.
I get no signal as soon as I walk in my door. Maybe there's a lesson to be learned here for startups, that it's less about the technology and more about the execution.
I think that's, you know, that's a key point, and maybe a good thing to wrap up on is, you know, there's been a lot I think you can't really talk about startups and technology in 2008 without talking about Twitter and laughing a little bit. But, you know, the one thing I've heard is, you know, people will say, well, it's because of Ruby on Rails. And I think a lot of that, and I've said that several times, but, you know, I think that really a lot of it is that it all comes down to execution, you know, and I've seen better performing systems running on Cold Fusion or ASP, you know. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it all comes down to how well you execute, and really your technology stack is a secondary consideration.
Trying to scale up after the fact is a nice problem to have. I mean, there's a lot of companies that never reach that point. They spend so much time dabbling with different technologies and trying to build features that no one uses, and you never hear about them.
All right. Well, any last thoughts before we wrap this up?
Let's not make this ending suck.
Like the rest of this podcast?
Yeah, the ending's the only hope we've got. All right. Thanks for sticking with us all the way through Herding Code Episode 7, and we'll talk to you next week.
It'll be better then.
Goodbye.